This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The big business of poaching trees to make lumber.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The Federal Jobs Act early last year made legal room for a new kind of investing, using online crowdfunding to raise the money. Think Kickstarter, but instead of getting maybe a T-shirt, you're buying a piece of a company. After a year and a half of deep pondering, there's a meeting today about the forthcoming rules. Marketplace's Dan Weissman has the story.
The rules here are for small-time investors, people without a few million bucks to burn. One concern is how the SEC can protect them from con artists. Richard Swart is partner at Crowdfund Capital Advisors. He says the good news is fraud is rare in crowdfunding. The platform itself makes fraud more difficult.
The crowd seems to be able to detect anomalies within a few hours. 12, 15 hours is common.
That's the good news. The bad news is, even without bad faith, the risks are huge. Startup investing means trying to pick the next Twitter or Facebook out of a field of thousands.
Those are very, very rare companies. There's two of those minted a year.
That's Naval Ravikant, co-founder of AngelList. It already does crowdfunding with high net worth investors.
If you have 50 investments and two of them turn out to be big hits, you're done way above average.
And the rest?
In most cases, you lose everything.
That's right. You don't even get a T-shirt. I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
Is Detroit really bankrupt? Put another way, does Detroit have the legal right to be bankrupt? This matter is in court today, and Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joins us with details. Morning, Mitchell.
Hi, David.
So Detroit, $18 billion in the hole, filed for bankruptcy protection in July. Where are we now?
Well, David, this is now the first phase of the case, and let me give you the cast of characters. So first, there's the state and an emergency manager appointed by the governor to so-called rescue the city. They say Detroit should be able to go bankrupt, pay less than it owes to its creditors, emerge with a level of debt that it can actually afford. And against them is unions and retirees. They say, oh, no, you don't, not if it means slashing our contracted pensions and our health care benefits.
So what's the argument?
Well, the unions and pension funds are going to argue this. The emergency manager didn't negotiate in good faith before declaring bankruptcy. And anyway, the city has assets that it can sell, like the water and sewer system, or it's got valuable paintings hanging at the Detroit Institute of Art. And the case for the pro-bankruptcy side, the city is insolvent. The pensions are massively underfunded. And by the way, they were mismanaged in the first place. If Detroit's bankruptcy goes smoothly, it could encourage other cities that say they can't pay their bills to try to do the same thing.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you very much.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Lumber Liquidators' quarterly profits are out this morning. Net income is up 58%, sales up 25%. An investigation continues into the household wood products company based in Virginia. Its shares fell 9% in the days that followed a visit last month by federal authorities bearing a search warrant. The search is believed to be connected to whether the company is knowingly or unknowingly selling wood that's been illegally poached. Lucas Powers is a reporter who got a firsthand look at illegal logging around the world, places like Indonesia, Cameroon, and he went to Russia. It was part of an investigative project at the University of British Columbia Graduate School of Journalism. Mr. Powers, good morning.
Good morning.
You traced illegally sourced timber back to the Russian Far East yourself. Why there?
there seems to be very systemic corruption in the forestry sector in the Russian Far East. And the reason for this actually dates back to the early 90s and the fall of the Soviet Union, when for all of its faults, it had a very robust forestry service. And then almost overnight, that service dissolved. And you had thousands of unemployed forestry workers and almost zero oversight from the government and doing business, cash business, with buyers coming over from China.
Now, you just mentioned China. There's demand there.
So one of the key points here is that the Russian Far East shares a several thousand mile long border with northeastern China, which is also the epicenter of wood product manufacturing in China. And of course, China has become the world's largest importer exporter of wood products.
Who loses when forests are cut illegally? It's almost like an overfishing issue. You end up with no forest.
It's the workers on the ground who are trying to cut trees down to feed their families, but at the same time, they're depleting the very resource they depend upon. You can drive for hours through the Russian country and you see forests in every direction and you think, wait a second, there's trees everywhere. But upon closer inspection, what you realize is that these are all second growth forests. They have all been logged out.
Anyone proposing ways to help ensure that lumber isn't poached?
So more recently, the United States sort of took the lead on this in 2008. They amended the Lacey Act, which is a century-old wildlife timber act, and they amended it specifically to focus on illegal timber. And what this does is it puts the onus on retailers like Lumber Liquidators, like Walmart, and says, if you don't know where your wood is coming from, you can be held criminally responsible for that.
Lucas Powers did original reporting on illegal sources of timber as part of an investigative project at the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of British Columbia. He's now working for CBC Canada. Mr. Powers, thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Interpol estimates that as much as 30% of timber is black market. Now, if you want to see an elegant use of digital media to explore an important public policy issue, check out the website that the International Reporting Project put together on this, and we have a link over here at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.